Speaker for this evening, Eric G. from San Diego.
Get this out of the way.
You don't have to get close, just has to be in front of you.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Eric Graff. I want to thank the group for having me back. It's amazing. I was asked to come back somewhere. That wasn't happening to me a lot when I got sober, right before I got sober. Even to a lot of years into sobriety, people didn't want me to come back. Yeah, 2 years sober, there was a meeting in a different fellowship, and they actually held a business meeting so that I wouldn't come back. You know, they took a group conscience. And even then, you know, there were a couple of sick people that said, yeah, we should keep them. You know, I was like, oh, shit, you know. That's cool. I want to welcome the nine newcomers, the one visitor, and Alfredo, the hostage taker. Thank you for that. It's always nice knowing that as a main speaker, I'm not the center of attention. As Christian would say, you're my fluffer. Some of you know me, some of you don't know me. You know, my whole deal in Alcoholics Anonymous is to have fun, you know. No matter what I do in life, whether it's work, my friends, family, the gym, whatever it is, if I'm not having fun, I don't want to be there. You know, I spent so many years isolated from a life of fulfillment and joy that today I can honestly sit here and say that those are the things that get me up in the morning, you know. And if you're new... You know, what gives me fulfillment and joy today probably doesn't give me fulfillment and joy. And I only say that because when I got here and I heard what speakers like myself at the podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous were saying gave them fulfillment and joy, I was like, I'm in the wrong room, man. I made a big mistake when I got here, you know. You guys were talking about, like, sobriety dates, and when I got here, I didn't give a shit about a sobriety date, you know, because probably, as some of you newcomers might understand, and some of you people that have relapsed over and over, you know, I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get a sobriety date, you know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous so I could get a little bit of relief, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time that that's why I got here, but that's exactly why I got here. You know, I didn't know that the world of change that was about to happen, I couldn't fathom it, you know. From where I was day one when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous to where I sit 14 years later, I had no idea. I couldn't comprehend it. If you told me that was going to happen to me, I would have been like, dude, I'm in the wrong room. It's impossible. You guys cannot make that happen for me. You guys were talking about sponsors. I was like, oh, this is good. Oh, you guys are really off your nut. And you know, you guys were talking about these people in your life, these momentum people that would drop anything they were doing to help you out. And what I didn't realize is even as a child, my teenage years and my young adulthood, I had always had people like that around me, but I couldn't see it. You know, because I was too busy trying to get from them to see that they were trying to just give to me. And today I know that the only way I get to stay around here is by grabbing that new guy and just shaking my head going, it's going to be okay, dude. It's going to be okay, you know. Because that's what guys did for me, you know. They just said it's going to be all right. And the other one was, you know, I remember I had about 4 days sober, and you guys were talking about a home group. I was just like, dude, I'm not a joiner. And the funny thing about that is you know, I knew what a home group was, you know. Even at 4 days sober, I knew what you guys were talking about, especially from the women. You know, they talk about their, like, women's meeting as being like, oh, my God, my women's meeting home group, all my ladies on Wednesday night. And I wanted to shoot myself. And because I knew what you guys were talking about. You guys were talking about being committed to something every single week. And I hadn't been committed to anything but alcohol my entire life, you know? And that scared me. That kind of commitment scared me. My home group's Old Town Speakers, and I went to that meeting for a year, and in order to be a home group member, all you had to do was go fill out a 3x5 card with your name, your sobriety date, your phone number, and your email on it. And that scared the shit out of me. I was like, man, that's a lot of commitment right there, you know? I was like, there's no way. My friend Liz says, just go put your name in the thing. Go put your name. I'm like, whoa, 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 baby steps, honey, baby steps. And and it took a long time, but I finally got there, you know. If you're new, I want you to know that there's no wrong way to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no wrong reason to be sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if that was true, I wouldn't be here tonight. You know, the first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting I went to, I had a little over 4 years sober. And I didn't go there because I wanted what you guys had. That's just not why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the most prestigious way you can get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I followed a girl into Alcoholics Anonymous. She had what I wanted, and I was willing to go to any length to get it, even if that meant sit in a stinky, dingy, dirty Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I mean, look at you people. Have you guys seen yourselves lately? This is a sad-looking group, you know? And there's no place that I would rather be than sitting here with you guys, you know? Because I know if I'm sitting here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous today at 14 years sober that I can just be me, regardless of what that looks like. You know, that you guys are going to accept me and you guys are going to say, hey, why don't you come back next week? You know, and there's no other place in the world that I found that but in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank you for that. Three most important things in my life are I have a sobriety date. It's August 21st. 2003. I didn't wake up on that day and go, hey, we're going to get sober today. It just kind of happened. I was in a sober living, and I didn't get to that sober living sober. I lied to her and said, oh, yeah, I've got like, you know, 4 months working a great program, and I just need a sober place to stay. And she said, okay, come on in. And I woke up a couple days later, and that just happened to be my sobriety date. You know, it wasn't anything monumental. Nothing huge happened in my life. All the big stuff that happened in my life for me to stay sober happened once I'd gotten sober. You know, I think I've told Lauren this. I've caused more damage in sobriety than I did before sobriety, and I'm not proud of that. That's just the path that I had to go down. And the second most important thing in my life is my sponsor. And some of you guys have met my sponsor. He's the greatest man in the world. You know. I look up to him. I want to be just like him. I trust him with my life. When he tells me to do something, I know that he's saying that not through his ego or to boss me around or to tell me what to do, but because he knows who I am all the way down to the center of my soul. And he goes, "This is what I think might be the best action for you to take." You know. And his name's Charlie Hill. His sobriety date's November 19th, 1979. His home group, Searchlight Nevada, and I love that man. You know, he probably sponsors 100 guys. I'm his favorite, obviously. And funny story about his wife and Lauren, but we'll save that one for later. Can I tell it? So I was dating Lauren for about 6 months, and she just moved down here, and she was having a hard time with sponsors, finding one that she could relate to, blah, blah, blah. And Lauren runs a really good program, really solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we were driving one night, and I'm like, I got the perfect sponsor for you. And she's like, dude, there is no way in hell I'm going to let you pick my next sponsor. I said, no, you don't understand. Charlie's wife, Irene, she's phenomenal, dude. She's like the best AA woman I've ever met. She's like, dude, it's going to be a cold day in hell before that happens. So a couple months later, Charlie and Irene came out to visit, and Lauren got to spend some one-on-one time with Irene and Charlie's mom, Maxine. And a couple days later, I'm talking to Lauren, and she's like, I asked Irene to sponsor me. And I'm like, yes! Winning! Winning right here! Winning! Oh, I love it when I'm right. And, huh? Oh, Eric 1, Lauren 0. And anyway, So, and the third thing is my home group, Old Town Speakers. It meets on Sunday at 7 o'clock at Mount Soledad Presbyterian Church. There's about 300 of us who meet there regularly. And, you know, when I got to that meeting, I got to that meeting. So, you know, a lot of people break their story up into what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And, you know, I've got so much ADD going on that I'm like the Quentin Tarantino of speakers. You know, I probably start at the end and then, you know, just you're going to have to try and figure it out. And, you know, I was engaged to that girl that I had followed into Alcoholics Anonymous. She was a newcomer. I had 4.5 years sober. I'm like, God, this is going to be perfect. And, you know, God wants it to happen, man. I know what you newcomers are thinking, too. You guys are all dating each other. We can make it together. Dude, my hats are off to you, I swear. I've seen it a million times. Like, two couples have made it, you know, out of a million. You know? Go buy a lottery ticket. I'll give you a buck. And I don't blame you. That's the funny thing. You know, nowhere in the big book does it say, hey, if you're new, you can't date each other. Thank God, because I wouldn't be here, you know. Oh, God, love those newcomer women. No offense. Lauren's got a lot of time. clear that one up real quick. So, you know, I'm engaged to this beautiful girl, you know, because her beauty and me being me, this is just going to work, you know. Like, this is what I'm telling myself. 4 years sober, zero program, show up in Alcoholics Anonymous, got this beautiful girl in my arm. I'm going to be a superstar in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how I got to you guys, you know. And she relapsed again, you know, and believe it or not, it broke my heart. That's not a funny thing, because I love this girl. I really love this girl, and so when she relapsed and gave me the ring back, I lost my higher power, my AA program, all in one shot. It was like gone, you know. I was smoked, and you know. For the 6 months I had been going to that meeting with her, there was this guy named Tom, and every week he'd come up and he'd say, hey, Eric, how you doing? And I'd be like, oh, I'm doing pretty good, kind of, you know, shuffle my shirt up like I'm a big deal, you know? And my perception of that guy is he thought I was so cool that he had to come up and shake my hand every Sunday. I couldn't have been farther from the truth, guys. See, that guy was an active member in Alcoholics Anonymous. That guy saw exactly what I was doing. That guy knew exactly what I was going to need, and he wanted to make sure that the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous was there when I needed it. See, what he was doing is he was implementing a thought process in me that I would not understand yet. Because when that girl left me and I had lost my higher power, I had lost my AA program and I was about to lose my sobriety. He came up to me again, and what I thought he was going to do, I thought he was going to come up and he was going to say, hey man, I'm really sorry for your loss. You know, I can see how bad you're hurt inside, you know, you need a friend. That man saved my life at that very moment. I can honestly sit here and tell you that that man saved my life in that very moment. He walked up to me and he didn't say those nice, kind things. He looked at me and he said, when are you going to get busy around here? He knew what I needed. I couldn't fathom it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that it existed. But that man knew I needed a program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life if I was going to make it through that situation and gain any long-term sobriety around here. And I looked at him, I said, what do I do? You know, because I didn't know what to do. I mean, yeah, you know, you hear it from the podium all the time, get a service commitment, get a sponsor, go to meetings, you know, work the steps, you know. Try and do that by yourself, you know. Try and do that by yourself. It's impossible. Because I did for a long time. And what that man did is he showed me everything about Alcoholics Anonymous that I needed to know. He didn't teach me about Alcoholics Anonymous and all the other bull crap that goes on around here. He taught me how to show up early. He taught me how to stand at the door and shake hands. How when I'm asked to speak behind the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, that I dress appropriately to show the ethics of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, he taught me that I need to pick up the phone when it rings, no matter who it is. Because, you know, you look at those numbers and you're like, do I owe that credit card money? Hang up. He's like, no, we answer those phone calls. Because you never know, that phone call, that number you don't know, could be some guy that you met 2 years ago at some convention or some meeting somewhere, and for some reason you're the only number that he has, and he's calling you and he's going, I need help. And I need to be responsible, and I need to be there to answer that phone call. He taught me about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're lined out in the big book, you know. How we did that is we opened up the first page and it's blank. And he goes, what do you think that means? I go, it's a blank page. He goes, no, that's what you know. Nothing, because there's nothing on it, you know. And then the second page, it says Alcoholics Anonymous on it. And he goes, that's your new life. And we just started breaking it down page by page, page by page, you know. And God, he lives in Alpine, dude. God. Fuck, dude, have you ever been to Alpine? It's like driving to Arizona, you know? And, you know, every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, I'd drive all the way up there with a resentment, you know, and God forbid I was a minute late. You know, I think Tisher was there one morning when I was a minute late. Oh, holy crap. And that was fun. Oh, you know, I want to get back to that guy. If me at 5 years sober walked in the meeting right now and asked me to sponsor me, I'd probably tell him no. I was such a wreck when I got here, man. I was unmanageable beyond unmanageable. And that guy said yes. That guy knew exactly who I was. He knew exactly what kind of job he was taking on, man. And I'm really grateful that he stuck that out. You know, because I don't know if I'd be here today, you know. So, I come from a loving, caring, alcoholic family. You know, my dad was a blackout drunk. My mom was, I still think she might have a little bit of a problem. But, yeah, thanks, Lauren. And my mom's a rager. You know, you, like, just talk to her about simple stuff, and she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, and all of a sudden just blows up on the phone. You know, you're like, whoa, you got to, like, hold it from away from your ear. And I love my parents. I really do, you know. Quick story. So my mom left my dad when I was 5 because he was a blackout drunk. He started getting violent and pushing my mom around, hitting my mom a little bit. And so my mom took me up north. And you know, 6 years ago, November, I got a call from my stepmom, and my stepmom goes, your dad needs to go to rehab. And I'm like, what? Why are you calling me? Like, you know, 6 years ago, my dad and I had a relationship. Like, yeah, we saw each other on Christmas. You know, that was about it. And she said, I don't know who else to turn to, Eric. I don't know anything about rehab or Alcoholics Anonymous or any of that crap, you know. And I said, okay, yeah, I'll take him. I don't know where he needs to go. And she said, I'll tell you. And so I went up there and grabbed him, and she said, this is where he needs to go. And I dropped him off at rehab. And I remember going there like 4 days into his detox. Holy shit. I should have recorded that. He's sitting there shaking and sweating and yelling at the nurses. I was like, oh, this is great. Oh, man. Now I know what he had to put up with. You know, it's funny how that comes full circle. You know, the amount of damage I caused in that relationship. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the amends process, I was able to say yes to that request. And I was able to drive up there, and I was able to take him to rehab. And I just, you know, it was like euphoric. I can't explain. Like, how that happens, how that comes, you know. And I remember he got out of that place and he's like, hey, I need to get a big book. And I said, you know what, I got one for you. And he drove down and we're sitting in my truck and he goes like, where do I start? What do I do? I go, well, why don't you read the doctor's opinion and go to a meeting by your house? And he said, I'm going to do that. And last November, he celebrated 6 years. And, you know, it's, my dad calls me every day, you know. If he doesn't hear from me in 24 hours, he gets a little pissy, you know. And, because my dad loves me today, you know. And I don't, it's not because I'm a good son or I'm a great guy. It's just because I took Alcoholics Anonymous to that situation and it just seemed to work out, you know. If you're new, I just kind of take AA with me, and you know, and shit just works out. You know, I don't overthink it. I'm not one of those BBAers where I gotta like break down word for word. I'm not that smart, folks. I'm really not. You know, I need the simple like Cliff Notes version of shit, and that works for me. You know, you know, I didn't really start having a really good relationship with my father till about after a year of dating Lauren. And, you know, I had a thought one morning, you know, Lauren lost her dad 9 years ago. And I know the amount of pain that she holds on to for that and that she has. And, like, how, like, when she talks about her dad, like, the good times that she had with her dad. You know, and like, I want those times, you know. I don't want to be that guy that at the end of the day, I'm kicking myself because I had a chance to make that situation right and I didn't, you know. And it's awesome. It's awesome. You know, I'm going up there tomorrow morning and he like texted me a week ago, can't wait for you to come up Sunday, you know, 6 more days, 5 more days, 4 more days. I'm just like, Jesus Christ, I'm not that cool. And, you know, you know, my mom takes me up north and with my little sister, and you know, at about 8 years old, my behavior is so erratic. I'm a violent, angry, loud, defiant little kid, and it's gotten to the point that my parents are scared for my sister's safety. You know, like they're afraid that I'm. Maybe not intentionally, but at some point I'm going to hurt her. So they put me in a 30-day mental ward for kids, you know, so I can be evaluated. I love that word, evaluate. You know, if you guys want to evaluate me, cool, you know. Like, I'm not responsible for what you find. And, but, you know, so they evaluated me and they let me out. And, you know, their recommendation to my my mother and my stepfather is that I need to go to more treatment for, you know, for adolescent, you know, behavioral issues. You know, I know you're looking at me now going, that guy? No way. And the vision for you. And and so, you know, I started to go to foster homes and these live-in boys' homes and, you know, when I was going through that process, I was really resentful at like, oh my God, you know, my parents hate me. They gave me away. I'm like basically in these like kid prisons. This is bull crap, blah, 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 blah. So I'm at this place called Ryther in Seattle. And on the weekends, they're taking a skiing. And, you know, we're going to the mall. And we're doing all this like awesome, amazing stuff. We're going on camping trips and fishing and, you know, crap that 9-year-olds want to do, you know, and I'm doing it all the time. But my perception of that situation is that I'm held as a prisoner against my own will, you know, at this place. But I look back on it now and I go, man, what an experience, you know. I had such an awesome experience growing up in that environment. You know, I lived in a foster home on the peninsula of Washington called a little town called Port Angeles. And Tom and Lynette Hostetler, man. And they collected and restored vintage Mustangs. They had 14 of them. You know, so I'm in the seventh grade at this point. Every day I'm getting dropped off in seventh grade, okay, in a different Mustang. Like a cool muscle car. Like I'm like the cool kid on the block right now, you know. And even in that situation, I'm looking at that going, I'm here as a prisoner, you know. I hate this place. I hate you guys, you know. And I had such a wonderful opportunity in those environments to excel in life, and I chose not to because of my resentful nature, my selfishness and my self-centeredness, you know. I needed to drink at like 6, you know, and I really did. And, you know, I want to get back to that boys' home. You know, I'm in that boys' home, and I learned some really good survival lessons there, you know, like life lessons, you know, that I'm going to take with me long term. And one of those lessons was, you know, if I could put on a certain mask or act a certain way or give you what I think you want, that you're going to like me, that you're going to accept me. You know, every fifth step that I've read with all the guys that I've sponsored over the years, the same crap's on there. It's just worded a little differently, you know. And I'm no different. And so what happened was there were some boys, and they were doing some sexual stuff, and they asked me if I wanted to join, and I said, yeah. Because I couldn't dread the thought of saying no and then them not liking me, you know. Now, I'm not gay. I don't have anything against gay people. But you put me with that perception in my head, that thought process, and I'll do almost anything, you know. I will do almost anything for you to like me. And that behavior has plagued me my entire life. I still catch myself doing it today in certain situations, you know, trying to people please, trying to be the, you know, the loudest guy in the meeting, or the, you know, the most quietest guy in the meeting, whatever it's going to take for you guys to like think that I'm like something that I'm not, so that you'll like me. You know, and so that behavior right there essentially led me to take my first drink. You know, I'm 12 years old, and there's some guys, and they're drinking Newport Kings and drinking some vodka. And I knew what vodka was, you know, because I saw my dad drinking. I saw what it did to my dad. I love hearing this. You know, I told myself I'm never going to smoke cigarettes because my mom smoked, and I'm never going to drink because my dad was an alcoholic, you know. Never, ever, ever. And those kids are passing that ball around, and they go, you want some? And my first thought was no. But I couldn't say that, you know, because I had to have these kids' approval. You know, they had to like me, you know. And so I took a swig off this thing, and oh, it was terrible, dude. Like, you know, I coughed it up, and it was just gross. And I didn't become alcoholic right then. I became alcoholic 5 seconds later, because when that bottle came back around to me, you know, I drank it, even though I didn't want it. And that right there is complete alcoholism for me, you know. I don't want what's in that bottle, but I got to have it. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, that was the exact same thought I had my last drink, is, you know what, I don't want this, but I got to have it. And drugs are a big part of my story. If you're new, drugs are not an outside issue. it's like me saying I'm a plumber, you know. It is what it is, you know. I love Doug Rowell. He always says, you know, 30 years ago, if I knew I was speaking at an AA meeting, I would have told the kid who passed me that joint, hey, man, I'm going to be main speaker at Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I can't screw this thing up. I'm going to have to pass, you know. Like, that just is what it is, you know. It's just my story, my experience. It's no, it has no truth to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just what happened to me. And I think that's great. And so I'm not a big drunk a lot guy. I got one drunk story. Usually gets a kick out of people. I'm a framer, and I'm building these big houses in Rancho Santa Fe and this place called the Heritage in Poway. I mean, these houses, this is like one bedroom, this whole room right here. Okay, just to kind of give you an idea how big, 25,000 square foot houses. And you know, the only way I can go to work is if I'm just loaded off my ass, man. I'm living in Solana Beach. There's a little bar that opens at 6. I don't have to be at work till 7, so I know I can get in there for the 6 to 6:30 happy hour, $2 well drinks, $10 on the table, get 5 of those in me, and bam, I'm off to work, you know. And one morning I didn't have the money to stop in there and get my well drinks, you know, and I had to get to work. So I got to work, and I'm nailing these metal straps to the bottom of these beams in this big garage. And, you know, I usually use this thing called a palm nailer, and It's a lot safer than using like a pneumatic air gun. And but I didn't give a crap. And so, you know, I'm still pretty wasted and high from 2 days ago. And so I take my 16-gauge nail gun, and there's a real tiny hole in this strap. Thanks, man. And only the nail can fit through it, okay? You can't imagine how big a 16-penny nail is, right? And so I'm going along, and I'm like, you know, lining up the nail. Bam! Got one. Oh, sweet. That's way faster than a palm nailer. And I'm getting paid hourly, too. It's not like I'm getting paid by the nail. And so I go to the next one. And I go to the next one, bam, got it. You know, I get about 8 in a row, you know, and I'm like boss right now, you know. It's always the 9th nail, right? And so I light up the 9th one, boom, it ricochets off the metal, hits the block wall, and hits me right in the baby-making part. And it hurt. It hurt real bad, you know. It, like, dropped me to my knees, and I'm in a fetal position, and I'm like, oh, God. My alcoholic thinking says, that was just an accident, Eric. I'm like, you're right. So I keep going at it. And I get about 6 more. I'm like, you know, I'm on a roll. It's always a 7th nail. And hits the metal, hits the block wall, hits me there, and drops me to my knees for like 5 minutes, man. It hurts so bad. And so this is where under the influence of alcohol and drugs, this is how I think. Now, I know none of you have ever done anything this stupid before, but I'm thinking I need a shield, you know? I need a shield, because this ain't going to happen again. It's my most prized possession. You're not taking it from me. So I go out into this, what we call a boneyard. It's like trash and wood and stuff, and there's a 5-gallon bucket lid. There's these orange 5-gallon bucket lids from Home Depot, right? And I grab one and I hike it under my tool belt. It's like this, you know? And I'm like, yeah, this is going to work. This is going to work. But I had to make sure. I had to make sure that it was going to work. Because I'm not losing that thing, dude. There's no way in hell that I'm losing that. Yeah. Him and I go way back. So I take my nail gun and I pull the safety back on it and I hold it out about 3 feet from me and I pull the trigger. Direct hit. Yeah. And I like pull this nail and this guard out, you know, and I'm holding myself and I hold my hand up in both my hands. I have like a cup of blood in my hand. And my boss Ray comes over to me and he goes, Eric, what were you thinking? Ray, I had to test it out, man. Doesn't that make sense? That's your speaker tonight. If you're new, you're like, Jesus, I got a chance. Oh. I'd like to say that was the dumbest thing I've ever done, but it's probably not. I was 8 years sober. I ran a garden hose. My dad let me borrow his camping trailer and to fill up the water that you use in the sink and the shower and so forth. You fill it up from inside. And my friend is outside next to the hose bib, and I'm like, all right, let it rip. And I'm filling this thing up, you know. And I'm like, all right, shut it off. Shut it off. And the water keeps going. Shut it off. Shut it off. And meanwhile, water's just spilling out of this thing all over the inside of the trailer. Now, there's a real simple solution here. Just take the hose, throw it out the door. Might get a little bit of water, but I flooded this whole thing because I wasn't sharp enough to think that, hey, you know, just throw the hose out the door, you know. So if you're new, you got a shot. I've made some pretty cool amends in Alcoholics Anonymous. About 6 and a half years ago, I'm working out at 24 Hour Fitness. I'm 300 pounds, 50% body fat, sponsored by Crisco. had a cool shirt. It's like, yeah, you know? And my buddy Anthony was a fitness model competitor guy, and there was this guy named Critter, and he was competing against my buddy Anthony, and my buddy Anthony kicked the crap out of him, took overall in the show, and so I saw Critter at the gym. Never talked to this guy a day in my life. I see him a week later at the gym. And this is my best thinking at, you know, 8 years sober. And I walk up to him and I go, dude, my friend Anthony just kicked your ass at that gym. I'm like this big, dude. I'm like, you know, they rolled me into 24. And what happened is that guy looked at me, and this guy, to this day, he's one of my best friends. This guy can kick the crap out of me. There's no doubt about it. Like, you know, there's not even like, oh, you might have a shot, Eric. No. Okay. And this guy looked at me. The look he gave me was he was disgusted at the kind of human being I was. He wasn't mad at me. He was just like, he felt bad for me. And when he looked at me like that, I remember the guilt and the shame that just riddled my body for how I behaved. And it just killed me. It like killed me for 2 years. And so about a year and a half later after that happened, I'm working out at this this new gym in PB. And I walk in there and I see that guy. And that guy gave me that same look that he gave me a year and a half before. And I was just like, ah, it just killed me. And for the next 6 months, every time I saw him, he looked at me like that. Like, God, man, it must suck to be you. You know? It really must suck to be you. I remember I went in there one morning and I was thinking, I'm like, if I see this guy, I got to go up to him and I got to make amends for that. You know? Here's a guy who's worked his whole life to have this perfect physique and to be as healthy as he can. And here's this fat ass coming up to him and being just a pathetic human being to him, cutting down everything that he's worked for, you know? And he was training a client, and I walked up to him and I said, hey, Critter, you know, I said some things to you that weren't very nice, and I wasn't doing it to be your friend. I wasn't doing it to be helpful. I was doing it to be an asshole. And I need to make this amends. I do apologize. If there's anything I can do to right this situation, please let me know. And he looked up at me and says, oh, we're cool, man. We're cool. You know, thanks. And I didn't feel any better after that. But what started happening is over time, every time I would see him, the contact between us got a little better. The contact between us got a little longer. And eventually, in between working out, we would find each other sitting next to each other on this couch talking, you know. And then we started going to breakfast. And then we started, you know, hanging out on the weekends, you know, going in his pool. We started working out together. I started doing holidays with him and his family, you know. It's not because I'm a good guy or I'm something special around here. It's because I took Alcoholics Anonymous into that situation and it just worked out. You know, it just worked out. I'm so very, very grateful for this program. You know, a guy like me doesn't deserve this gift, and yet I have it. There's people that live two blocks from here who are dying from alcoholism, who have never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, who have no idea that this solution even exists. And yet here we sit tonight. And most of you guys will get up after this meeting and say, no, thank you, and I totally understand. I totally understand. If you're new, I hope you remember one thing from tonight. No matter what the situation is, no matter how it happens, what circumstances come awry, every alcoholic takes his last drink. Thanks.